Welcome, dear listeners and seekers of truth, to a voyage not through oceans, but through time, money, and the shifting tides of economic thought. Arabella Nightwind has now been orange-pilled by Blackbeard, after he himself was taken down the rabbit hole by Captain Michael Saylor. Today, we embark upon a journey guided by the Bitcoin Standard, a thought-provoking work penned by Dr. Saif Adin Amous, a man whose roots lie in the resilient and storied land of Lebanon, where the echoes of Phoenician trade still whisper through the cedars. Dr. Amous is not merely a student of economics. He is a herald of the Austrian school, a torchbearer for sound money principles in an age adrift in fiat illusions. Educated at Columbia University and having served as a professor at the Lebanese American University, he has earned a reputation as a bold critic of central banking and inflationary policy. His intellect is sharp, his prose unflinching, and his thesis clear. Bitcoin represents not just a technological breakthrough, but a return to monetary sanity. In this seminal work, Dr. Amous traces the lineage of money, from shells and salt to gold and government fiat, culminating in the digital era's most defiant creation, Bitcoin. Whether you approach this book as a curious newcomer or a seasoned investor, you'll find within its pages a powerful challenge to conventional economics and a compelling case for a decentralized alternative. Now, brace yourselves, for no voyage be complete without the roaring winds of a pirate's insight. Let us turn the wheel over to Blackbeard, who has been stirred from Davy Jones's locker to offer his spirited review.
Ahoy there, me salty sea dogs and curious landlubbers. Welcome aboard the Pirate's Code podcast, coming to ye loud and lively from the turquoise waters of Grand Cayman, where the sea's as clear as a polished doubloon and the taverns spill more tales than a ship's log in a storm. This be Captain Blackbeard, risen from the briny deep with gold in me beard and fire in me gut, ready to chart the treacherous yet tantalizing waters of sound money and digital treasure. Now mark me words. I be still diving into the murky depths of this here thing called Bitcoin, a ghostly currency with no flag nor harbor, yet it haunts the central banks like a phantom fleet. I've cracked open a mighty tome by a clever scribe named Saif Adin Amous. A man who writes like a cannonball and thinks like a privateer, the Bitcoin Standard. And today we begin our review with chapter one, money. In this first chapter, Amous lays down the keel of his argument by asking the simplest yet most dangerous question of all. What be money? He speaks not of banknotes or credit cards, but of the true essence of money, the tool that lets one crew barter their rum for another's gunpowder without bloodshed or confusion. He introduces the idea of salability, a word fancier than a governor's wig, but meaning how easy a thing can be traded across time, space, and scale without losing value. Gold, he says, be the king of salability. Hard to make, easy to trade, and immune to the schemes of counterfeiters and meddling governments. Amous hoists the idea that good money must be scarce and durable, like a ship that don't rot and don't sink. He shows how civilizations that use strong money rose like high tide, while those that debased their coinage sank like cursed galleons. He even introduces the stock-to-flow ratio, which tells us how long it'd take to double the supply of a good. Aye, the higher the ratio, the harder the money. And in that measure, gold be king. But Bitcoin, the upstart, sails close behind. So hoist your hammocks and sharpen your wits, for this voyage is only begun. Next chapter, we'll drift back in time to the age of shells, stones, and other primitive monies. Let the wind catch our sails, and the knowledge swell like a rising tide. We now chart our course to chapter two, Primitive Monies In the Bitcoin Standard, where the author takes us back before banks and bullion, when the world was still young and coin was but a glimmer in a merchant's eye. Primitive monies be a tale of curious trade and fragile trust. A moose spins the yarn of early societies who used what was at hand. Rye stones in Yap, cowrie shells on the African coast, and shiny trinkets to grease the wheels of barter. These forms of money, though quaint as a cabin boy's first tattoo, had a fatal flaw. Their supply was easy to increase once the know-how spread. When too many seashells wash ashore, their value be as worthless as promises from a drunken quartermaster. The good doctor shows how primitive money's like the hardness that keeps coin honest. He tells the tale of the island of Yap, where giant stone discs served as currency, so large they couldn't be moved. And yet, when foreign scallywags arrived with better boats and tools, they started churning out more stones, and poof, the money lost its magic. Sound money, a moose argues, must be resistant to sudden surges in supply, else ye be bamboozled into trading your treasures for trinkets. In short, matey, money must be earned, not conjured. The chapter sets the stage for why Bitcoin, like gold of old, matters. Not just for what it is, but for how it cannot be made too easily. These early currencies were lessons written in driftwood. Useful for a time, but doomed when the tide turned. Now hoist the sails for Chapter 3, where we enter the Golden Age, literally, and learn why monetary metals ruled the seven seas of commerce. A rousing eye to ye, matey! We now plunge headfirst into Chapter 3, Monetary Metals, where the glitter of gold and the clang of silver take center deck. The tide of primitive monies has ebbed, and we've entered the Age of Metal, where money be forged in fire and trust be hammered like a cutlass on an anvil. Dr. Amoose spins the tale of how metals, especially gold and silver, rose to dominance not by decree, but by natural selection in the market of trade. Unlike seashells or stones, metals could be weighed, divided, stored, and transported with ease. And most importantly, they could not be conjured out of thin air. Aye, it took hard work to dig them from the earth, smelt them, and shape them into coin. That difficulty, says Amoose, made him trustworthy, a coin that don't lie, unlike the slippery words of kings and bankers. He lays special praise upon gold, the metal with a heart of fire, and the soul of an empire. Because of its high stock-to-flow ratio, gold became the hardest money known to man. Its supply grew slow, even as empires rose and fell. Civilizations that embraced gold often thrived with stable economies and prosperous peoples. But those that clipped the coin or debased the metal, adding lead to silver or copper to gold, soon found themselves begging on the wharf. Amoose makes it clear, monetary metals weren't chosen by tradition or force. They were chosen because they worked. They were resistant to decay, easy to verify, and nearly impossible to counterfeit, making them the perfect treasure for pirates, princes, and peasants alike. But even this golden age was not to last. For in the shadows lurked a new force, governments hungry to control the coin and inflate the purse. So raise your tankards, mates. Chapter 3 reminds us why gold ruled the earth for thousands of years and why any true money must be as unyielding as a kraken's grip. Shall we now brave the stormy shores of Chapter 4? Government money, where the real skullduggery begins. Gather round me, hearties, for now we sail into Chapter 4. Government money, a chapter thick with treachery, ambition, and the kind of deceit that'd make even the most cutthroat corsair blush. In this chapter, Dr. Amoose pulls back the velvet curtain of modern finance and shows us what happens when kings, states, and central banks hoist their own colors over the coin or the realm. The tale begins with the shift away from gold and silver to paper promises. Aye, flimsy little notes that say, "Trust me, there be gold behind this." But soon enough, like a pirate who's drank too much rum, those in power couldn't resist the temptation to print more notes than treasure they held. Governments, the doc argues, found it far easier to inflate the supply of money than to raise taxes or cut their own spending. 'Twas the perfect trick, robbing the people without drawing a sword. He charts how fiat money, paper not backed by gold nor silver, took over the world stage, especially after the gold standard was abandoned. This betrayal of honest coin, Amoose says, led to constant inflation, booms and busts, and the loss of monetary discipline. Instead of saving, folk were now pushed to spend like sailors on shore leave, for the value of their coin shrank with each passing moon. And what's worse, central banks became the new monarchs of money, manipulating interest rates and conjuring currency at will. To Amoose, this is no less than an attack on freedom itself. Without sound money, a man's labor be stolen, bit by bit. Not with muskets, but with inflation charts and balance sheets. So, me buckos, chapter 4. Be a grim warning from the crow's nest. When the government prints the money and sets the rules, you better keep one eye on your gold and the other on the horizon. 'Tis a tale of betrayal, but also the spark that sets the stage for the rise of a new kind of treasure, one they can't debase. Shall we press on to chapter 5? Money and time preference, where we see how sound money shapes not just economies, but men's very souls. Avast, ye noble truth seekers and sea-worn listeners. Ye've braved the treacherous tides of primitive trade, golden glories, and the scheming schemes of fiat-fueled empires. Now, we sail into chapter 5, money and time. Preference, a chapter where Dr. Amoose drops anchor not in the markets, but in the very hearts of men. This be no simple talk of coins and ledgers, but a deeper dive into how money shapes the way we live, plan, and dream. Amoose introduces the mighty notion of time preference, the measure of whether a man prefers a single mug of grog now or two mugs tomorrow. A high time preference means you live like a pirate on payday, spending fast, thinking short, and caring little for the morrow. A low time preference, on the other hand, means you save, build, and plan for a future storm or bounty. And what affects a man's time preference most of all? The quality of his money. When money holds its value, like gold or Bitcoin, folk are encouraged to save, invest, and think long term, like a captain setting course for riches across the sea. But when money loses value through inflation, the incentive be to spend it fast before it sinks like a cannonball. This, Amoose argues, leads to a decay of morals, culture, and civilization itself. If ye can't trust your money to hold, why plant orchards when ye can loot a store? He offers historical charts and sharp wit to show how sound money civilizations built cathedrals, libraries, and legacy, while fiat-fueled ones built casinos, debt, and chaos. A grim picture, aye, but a rousing reminder that money be more than metal. It be the compass that guides a man's future. So, there ye have it, mates. This chapter be a call to treasure, not just gold, but prudence, patience, and purpose. For if your coin is rotten, your compass is broken. And that, as any old sea dog knows, leads straight into the rocks. Aye, hoist the mainsail and lash the wheel, for we now chart a course into chapter 6, Capitalism's Information System, where Dr. Amoose turns his spyglass upon the very heartbeat of the market. Price signal. and shows how fiat folly scrambles it worse than a sailor lost in the fog. Safe begins by reminding us that under true capitalism, not the crony kind with lords and lobbyists at the helm, the market speaks through prices. These prices, he says, are not just numbers. Nay, they be the purest form of information flowing from every trader, tinker, and toymaker across the realm. A price tells us what's scarce, what's wanted, and where to send our ships and silver. But for this system to work, the money must be as honest as a parley under the white flag. And here lies the devil in the hold. Unsound money distorts the price signal. When central banks flood the world with cheap coin, interest rates plummet, and with them go the market's ability to distinguish wise investment from foolish speculation. It's like trying to steer a ship by a broken compass. The sea looks calm, but the reefs wait just below. Entrepreneurs be lured into unprofitable ventures, debts balloon like a fat merchant's belly, and soon the whole economy be drifting toward shipwreck. A moose likens this chaos to malinvestment, where the signals of the market are warped, and folk build what shouldn't be built, buy what shouldn't be bought. It's a dance of drunken sailors, made worse by the punch bowl of easy money. But with sound money, gold in the past, and perhaps Bitcoin in the future, the price signal shines true, guiding investment to where it's truly needed, not where it's falsely promised. So there ye have it, mates. Money ain't just a store of value. It be the rudder of the capitalist ship. And when that rudder's warped, all hands best brace for a storm. Stay sharp. For in the next chapter, we'll speak not just of coin and commerce, but of freedom itself. A rousing eye to ye brave soul, for now we sail into chapter 7, sound money and individual freedom, where the waters run deep and the stakes be higher than a crow's nest in a storm. This chapter ain't just about coin or commerce, it be about liberty itself, and how the type of money in your pouch can shape the very fate of your soul. Saif ed-Din hoists the Jolly Roger over central banks in this chapter, declaring that unsound money be the favorite tool of tyrants, for it lets them tax without consent. Aye, with the press of a button, the modern king inflates the coin, stealing value from the people without swinging a sword. This quiet pillaging be worse than piracy. It's legal plunder, sanctioned by law, but no less ruinous than a broadside from a galleon. But when money be sound, like gold in days of old, or Bitcoin in this digital age, it puts the power back in the hands of the people. A fixed supply of money means a government must earn its coin through honest taxing, not through sneaky debasement. A moose argues that sound money limits the size and reach of the state because it'd be harder to fund endless wars, welfare schemes, and bloated bureaucracies without a money printer hidden below deck. He draws examples from history, Rome, Weimar Germany, and even modern America, showing how civilizations rot when their money rots, and how inflation leads to dependency, decay, and the death of freedom. With Bitcoin, he says, there be a chance to reverse the tide, to give the common man a shield against tyranny, a coin no king can counterfeit, no banker can bamboozle, and no tyrant can inflate. What's that? Just put me on pause, and I shall be here when ye return. So if ye value your liberty, me hearties, pay close heed to the kind of money ye hold. For as the chapter makes clear, freedom sails best on the wind of sound money, and any land without it be wangas away from a despotic storm. Aye, aye, ye sea-hardened truth-seekers, now we make landfall at chapter 8, digital money, where the sails of theory give way to the solid deck of Bitcoin itself, the flagship of this new monetary fleet, sailing boldly through the digital abyss. In this chapter, Dr. Amus finally brings Bitcoin to the helm and lays out why this strange, intangible code be more than just a clever trick of techies, but a monetary revolution forged in cyberspace and tempered by cryptographic fire. He compares Bitcoin not to mere currencies, but to gold itself, calling it digital gold because of its limited supply, difficulty to produce, and resistance to control. With a total supply locked forever at 21 million, Bitcoin be the rarest treasure ever charted, rarer than any chest Blackbeard ever plundered. Unlike fiat currency, which can be conjured with a politician's promise and a printer's ink, Bitcoin's supply is governed by code, not kings. Its creation be tied to proof of work, a process that takes time, energy, and effort, just like digging gold from the earth. Safe shows how this ensures monetary hardness, making Bitcoin a better store of value than any paper note or spreadsheet entry. No crew, no matter how clever or corrupt, can inflate the supply, not without breaking the very laws of mathematics. He goes on to explain how decentralization is Bitcoin's cutlass against censorship. There be no captain, no central bank, no portal authority to seize or freeze your treasure. Transactions are recorded on the blockchain, a public ledger as open as a sea under moonlight, where every coin's journey can be traced, but never tampered with. So there ye have it, me hearties. Bitcoin ain't just money. It's a declaration of independence, a mutiny against the crown and the banking cabal. It's the first truly sovereign currency, floating outside the reach of tyrants, pirates, and greedy governors alike. In this chapter, Safe raises not just a coin, but a banner, Bitcoin, as the final bastion of sound money in a world adrift in fiat folly. Aye, steady as she goes, ye brave-hearted buccaneers. Now we set our sights on Chapter 9. What is Bitcoin good for? Where Dr. Amoose casts aside the myths and merchant talk and lays bare what this digital doubloon be truly fit for in the grand voyage of civilization. In this chapter, Saif ad-Din answers the question that many a doubter mutters into their mug. Aye, but what can ye do with Bitcoin? And he answers with the certainty of a captain reading the stars. While Bitcoin may not be ideal for buying a bottle of rum at the corner tavern just yet, its true strength lies elsewhere as a store of value and a settlement layer, not a day-to-day doubloon. He makes clear that Bitcoin's greatest strength be in its hardness and sovereignty, not in its speed. Unlike fiat coin, which rots in your hand through inflation, Bitcoin rewards patience, long-term thinking, and low-time preference. It ain't for spending, it's for saving, like a hidden chest of gold under the floorboards. As a final settlement system, Bitcoin can move millions across oceans with no middlemen, no trust required, and no gatekeeper to say nay. He compares it to gold in the vault, not copper in the purse. Over time, as layer 2 solutions and technologies evolve, like the Lightning Network, Bitcoin may handle small daily trade. But its core value, says Amoose, is as the foundation stone of a new monetary system, one that be incorruptible, borderless, and neutral. So what be Bitcoin good for? It be good for protecting wealth, preserving freedom, and settling large accounts between honest folk without fear of manipulation or seizure. In short, it's good for what gold once was, before the kings and paper pushers took the helm. Arr, we've reached the final port of this mighty voyage. Chapter 10. Bitcoin questions, where the good doctor faces down the fiercest broadsides fired by critics, skeptics, and landlubbers who think this digital treasure be naught but sea foam and sorcery. But like any good captain, he stands firm at the helm, answering every challenge with sharp wit and steady hand. This chapter be a barrage of objections, concerns over Bitcoin's energy use, volatility, regulation, scalability, and more. The first cannonball to fly, Bitcoin uses too much energy. To which the doc replies, aye, and so does civilization. He argues that the energy spent securing Bitcoin be not waste, but proof of its integrity, just as gold mining is costly, but worthwhile. In fact, he claims Bitcoin's energy use is a feature, not a flaw. It be the price of true scarcity and resistance to fraud. Next, he faces the storm of Bitcoin's too volatile, like a dinghy in a tempest. But volatility, says a moose, be natural for any new money finding its place in the world. He reminds us that value must be earned. And as adoption grows, the seas will calm. Today's price swings are the growing pains of monetary revolution, a tempest worth weathering if it means anchoring to sound money. He swats away fears of government bans, reminding us that Bitcoin be decentralized and borderless. No king nor parliament can scuttle it entirely. Even if banned in one harbor, the ship sails free in another. As for scalability, he explains that Bitcoin's base layer be like gold bars used for settlement, while second layers like the Lightning Network handle the daily trade, much as banknotes once did for gold. In the end, Amoose shows that Bitcoin's strength lies in its design, limited, unforgeable, and apolitical. Every critique leads back to this truth. It be the hardest, soundest, most sovereign money ever conceived. And like any true treasure, it's not for the faint of heart, but for the bold, the patient, and the free. So there you have it, me crew. From seashells to Satoshis, from emperors to encryption, we've charted the full map of the Bitcoin standard. Whether ye hoard Bitcoin or still eye it with suspicion, the voyage leaves no doubt. The world's money is changing, and the smart sailor best learn the new tides. Aye, gather close now, mates, for the final word on this mighty voyage through the Bitcoin standard. A book not just of coin and code, but of freedom, fire, and the fight for a better world. Let Blackbeard, scourge of the sea, and now a scholar of Satoshis, give ye the rap proper. The Bitcoin standard be no ordinary book. It's a treasure map charting a course from the wreckage of inflation and tyranny to the uncharted isle of monetary sovereignty. Dr. Saif Adeen Amoose sails us from the days of shells and stones through the golden ages of hard money to the dark dominion of fiat, and finally, to the dawn of Bitcoin, the hardest money the world's ever seen. His case is clear, and his cannons well aimed. If money be broken, then all else, trade, time, and trust, begins to rot in the hull. And now the true wind fills our sails. If Bitcoin fulfills its potential, if it be adopted far and wide as the new world standard, then the ancient grip of the so-called elites, those bankers, planners, and smooth-tongued tyrants who've long used fiat like a leash, shall be broken. No longer will governments and central banks debase the coin to feed their bloated hulls. Nay, Bitcoin gives every man and woman the power to protect the fruits of their labor without asking permission from any crown or cartel. In such a world, the quality of life no longer depends on proximity to power, but on wisdom, work, and will. Families can save without fear, build without debt, and dream without inflation gnawing at their future. It be a world where value flows as freely as the wind across the Caribbean, and where sovereignty returns to the citizen, where even the poorest sailor can chart his own course, guided by the honest compass of sound money. So, to all ye listening to the Pirate's Code, take heed. This book be more than pages and ink. It be a call to arms, to raise the Jolly Roger of financial freedom and sail toward a horizon where no empire holds sway over your coin or your conscience. If Bitcoin succeeds, the people of the world may finally be free to live not just by survival, but by dignity. Now go forth, ye brave crew, hodl your treasure wisely, teach others the code, and may your future be as bright as the Caribbean sun. Blackbeard, out!
That was absolutely awesome, Captain Furious. I swear, I nearly leapt to my feet and cried, "Freedom!" like Mel Gibson in Braveheart. By the way, love, you owe me a delightful meal ashore. Being the most famous pirate to ever sail these waters, why don't you choose a fine place for us to dine here in the Caymans?
Aye, me Rose of Tortola, it'd be me honor. How does the South Coast Bar and Grill sound? Fine grub, sea breeze in your hair, and sunsets that'd make a siren swoon.
It is wonderful, right on the water, a view to make poets weep. But we've been there, remember. I fancy something a bit different this time.
Very well, sunshine of the sea. What say ye to the White House? Ye always love sitting on that deck stretching into the waves. Or do ye have another treasure in mind?
It's nice also. A lovely place. The tourists love it. A bit crowded sometimes, but whatever place you choose will be fine, captain of my heart.
What about St. June? Great service, great view.
It does have a lovely view of 7 Mile Beach, but sometimes the Ophelia Bar gets a little rowdy. I was thinking perhaps something a little more private, but it doesn't matter to me. You choose.
Arr! I hate it when I have this much trouble deciding. I think that Seaside Paradise restaurant might be the ticket.
Blackbeard, my love, how in the world did you know the exact place I had in mind? Thank you for choosing. It's a smaller beachfront restaurant with more privacy and some of the best local food we have ever eaten.
Lucky guess, I suppose. I'm glad you allow the man of the ship to make the decisions. I wonder if landlubbers have as much trouble deciding where to dine as meself.